Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today is Sunday, March 19th, and this is Celtics Beat on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio-video coverage of the Boston Celtics. I'm Adam Kaufman. Episode 504 features The Athletic's Jared Weiss.
And I'm Evan Valenti. This show is powered by FanDuel, HelloFresh, and BetterHelp. Go to FanDuel.com/Boston to get a $200 bonus on your first bet of at least $5 or more. Go to HelloFresh.com and use the promo code BEAT60 for 60% off and free shipping. And go to BetterHelp.com/BEAT to get 10% off your first month.
Okay, what's up, everybody? New edition of Celtics Beat. I'd say I hope all are well, but if you watch the Celtics game in Utah, you're probably still a little sick to your stomach. If I look disheveled at all, like I haven't showered or anything like that, one, I don't owe anything to you. I don't have to. And two, I sort of feel like crap after this thing. Kaufman, Valenti, and here for the first time in a little while, I don't even know the last time, but kind enough to rejoin us from The Athletic, Jared Weiss. How are you, man?
I'm phenomenal.
It looks beautiful where you are.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous 35 degree St. Patrick's Day Sunday. So it's going to be, this guy's going to be full of booze in no time, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, I guess if anyone had reason to celebrate after that Celtics loss, having nothing to do specifically with the defeat, it was the fact that eventually later on in the night, Celtics did clinch a playoff spot. And so we know Boston's heading back to the playoffs. We've known that for a while. It's a foregone conclusion. Question, of course, will be seeding, sort of battling 1-3 right now. They've dipped to third, although still two games back of first and in a tie for second in that sense, but not the exact number of games played. I don't want to give you the popsicle headache with all of it, but this kind of, I think, Jared, is going to be more of it's always a big picture show, but more of a bigger picture. Okay, 10 games left before the playoffs do arrive. You know, the C's overall, I think people will be generally fine with a 4-2 trip if they can go out on Tuesday and, you know, win in Sacramento, beat Kyle Draper's Kings. That would be wonderful. But There are a lot of things that came out of that game in Utah and just general trends basically over the last few months that people are not happy about. And I want to, before we jump into everything, I want to read just some of the Twitter interaction last night, because my mentions, I couldn't even read through all of them. Not because I didn't want to. They just were nuts. I tweeted out, among other tweets, bad loss, no doubt. Celtics were up by 19 points, nearly double digits late, blew it, should have had the W, but let's not pretend they weren't missing three starters either. Three of their best defenders, too. No Horford, no Smart, obviously no Rob Williams, who could be playing soon. These big picture overreactions are wild. Tomorrow is a new day. So among the replies, Pats fan Mike, this team is missing something and not good enough. 28-point lead to the Nets. Multiple 15-plus point leads blown, lost to the Rockets. I'm sorry you can't see it. Colin, Celtics are tied for third seed after having the best record in the NBA most of the season. Each loss makes the path to a championship more difficult, and they've been trending down for months. That's why there's worry. Dave says the absolute best position you can be in against the Celtics is down 15. You're guaranteed to win. Sam Berger, stop making excuses. How many times this year have we said bad loss? How many times have starters been missing? There's a reason they're missing. They're injury prone. Tatum has been terrible for over a month. The big picture is concern. I loved this one, too. Sean, go watch the documentary on the 86 Celtics. Shout out, by the way, to NBC Sports Boston. A killer job on that. Then you will understand the standards we expect, the grit we know is possible, the determination we know that is needed, and then you will understand the overreactions with this group at times. Just saying, they accept losing. And Matt adds in among, there were so many tweets, but I'll read one more. Big picture, if Tatum sucks, you're not winning anything. And he has sucked of late. So, Jared, tell me, before I get to some specific questions about some of the 10,000-foot view, I guess, from fans, how are you feeling about this team right now as the playoffs are close?
I mean, clearly the problem is that Tatum sucks, apparently. So,
Can I mention, though, I would have hit a 16-leg parlay last night. If 16 legs, if Tatum had just had 21 points. That's it. That shouldn't have been a big ask out of Jason Tatum, but yeah, go ahead.
That's probably your fault for betting on that.
Yeah.
16-leg parlay? What the hell is that even?
I was screwing around.
So Tatum has not been that good lately. And do you start resting him on, you know, non-back-to-backs at this point? Do they even have a back-to-back left? I think they have one left, right? Two left.
I'll double-check it for you.
Yeah, they have one at home against Utah and then against Toronto the week after that. So I wonder if they're going to rest Tatum on some of these nights. I think they're past the point of, you know, Brad Stevens initially defended Tatum playing so many minutes by saying it's actually helpful for Tatum to get these deep, like these 40-minute games during the regular season to help prepare him for the load of the playoffs. And that's true to a degree, but if it's happening twice a week, it's probably a little bit of overkill, right? So I think Tatum looks worn down, and I'm sure the hip is still bothering him from the other night. The wrist seems to still be an issue from you know what you can see out there, just like with his shot release just looks a little bit off. You know, he's not going for the rack the same way, like with the same level of ferocity that he had earlier in the year. We're seeing a lot more of those ugly floaters again. So Tatum is just a little bit off. I think you got to give him a little bit of time to rest here. There's only 10 games left, and they're close enough in the seeding that, you know, they are in third place, but they're technically tied for second place. They're in second place. You know, it's like we'll wait until the end of the season. Not to mention, I think they play Philly
again, coming up,
right? Yeah, last game. So that one will basically serve as a tiebreaker if they're knotted up. So, you know, like we can still look at them as second place either way, but third place sounds bad. It really reflects the state of affairs anyway. But so they can afford to rest Tatum here and challenge their team to be like, all right, go win without Tatum. And I mean, they have to be able to demonstrate that because, frankly, they haven't been playing well with Tatum. They're not in sync with him on the crunch time offense. He is kind of stagnant, and the rest of the offense is stagnant, and a lot of these key moments at the end of games. And I think it'll be good for the team to just kind of get a couple chances to win those moments without him, just to remind themselves, like, we're at our best when we're all moving around, when we're working together. And, you know, JT has, like, spent the whole year making really good reads, doing a good job passing out of double teams, like, trying to draw a crowd and then kick out. So it's not like Tatum doesn't know how to run the offense properly in crunch time. It's just like we've just seen a lot of plays where they swing the ball to him and he's just like straight up just like stands there for 5 seconds waiting to square his guy up before doing like nothing with it. And I mean, we've seen great players do this over the years. It's not like Jason Tatum invented the crappy isolation in crunch time, but it doesn't work very often. It's like the worst thing that you can do basically in those moments. And this team was winning when they didn't do that stuff. And the fourth quarter was all about trying to reinvigorate the ball movement as things slowed down. And they've lost that. It's not like it's completely gone. Like if you watch a fourth quarter, you're going to see a few possessions in there where you're like, all right, this looks good. But there's more possessions where it doesn't look good. And honestly, at this point, maybe having one of the Jays sitting on a few of these nights will actually be beneficial for them.
Will he refuse it? Will he? I mean, I know that ultimately he doesn't have the final say. I just mean, is he going to have a problem with it? Because to your point, he does look worn down. And there's a big difference between a guy just looking off and a guy looking tired. You don't want a guy to look tired when the playoffs haven't even started yet. And you're hoping for a 2-month run with, you know, in his case, him or any number of guys around them, you know, on this team being at his absolute best, especially because, and I know this is in the back of his mind somewhere, the way he closed out the postseason last year was not a good final series against Golden State. You know, he's been talking about it throughout the offseason, much at, you know, at points of this season that, you know, he knows what's at stake. He knows that there's an element of legacy long-term on the line, that was a championship that they may look back as a missed opportunity last year. And everyone has been talking about them as a finals favorite, a championship favorite throughout the vast majority of this year.
Well, their last 15 games, they're 8-7. They have not been a legit, or not legit, they're still a legit contender. They've not been a front runner for months. No. That's changed. People still use full season numbers with this team. And like, that would be, I think that would kind of be like using full season numbers with last year's team. Like last year's team flipped a switch in January end of January, early February. And then they completely changed the way they played. They completely changed who they are. And we saw that team, for the most part, carried through in the playoffs. And obviously the playoffs are going to test you. You're going to recede into some of your bad habits and you try to break through those. That's okay. That's fine. That's how it goes. You know, if you watch a champion play their game over the course of a playoff run, only a few of them really truly stuck to every one of their principles throughout the run. It's like, it kind of forces you to do things the hard way and the ugly way to get by. That's how it usually works in a playoff run. And right now we're seeing them playing playoff type basketball and it's not going well. And they're doing it against, you know, like they've had a few losses to teams that they should beat. And, you know, you're not guaranteed to beat those teams, right? You should beat those teams. Utah, it's not like they're Houston. God forbid you lose to a game to Houston. I couldn't imagine the Celtics doing that. But like Utah's a team where if you lose to them, you're like, okay, like they at least like play well. They have a few guys that can get hot. Walker Kessler is better than Rudy Gobert. It's like you can see how you could lose to Utah. That Houston game is just like this weird anomaly where I don't know what they did the night before, but clearly they didn't show up to that game at all. And so, you know, you look at the way that they're playing right now, it's like you can see that if they played the style of basketball and they truly were locked in, they truly had that extra level of effort, they were making cuts, they were making reads a little bit more aggressively, they were crashing the glass a little bit more aggressively, you could see them winning these games. And so I think there's definitely a component of like, it's the regular season, and you know, Jaylen Brown even said it, like it's hard for them to get up for these games. And as bad as that sounds, it's kind of understandable when you think about where they've been and where they're trying to get to. But the problem is, like, you can't just walk into the playoffs playing like crap, and they're playing like crap. Like, it's pretty obvious.
So, Evan, I know you've got a lot to say, and we'll do that. But just because we're on Tatum, I want to read this text or tweet or whatever from Muhammad. It says, depends, you know, all of this, all these struggles, depends what you think about Tatum. Is he really an MVP-type player? He seems like someone who can't gather himself when things go bad. When he unravels, it's pretty bad. Can we trust someone like that to get you to the promised land? Because right now I trust JB more, and I'm not putting, you know, credence into that. I still believe, and I think most people would believe, Jason Tatum is overall a better player than Jaylen Brown. But there's no question that in recent weeks, Brown has been the better player.
Yeah. I mean, Muhammad's making a good point in that we've seen Tatum have these moments where he recedes into, recedes into his bad habits. We saw it on that 2-for-1. In the Utah game where he came down and he just took a contested three right away. And we've seen a few times here where Tatum takes bad shots on the front end of a 2-for-1 that I think are pointless, because you're then just putting yourself in a deeper hole to get a short possession shot off with more pressure on you. I'd rather lose a 2-for-1 opportunity to create a good look, or squeeze the other end of a 2-for-1 opportunity to get a good look. What's the point of basically erase? Like when he comes down and he takes that shot, he's basically punting on the possession because it's just not a good shot. You know, you can spend an extra 5 seconds to try to work a slightly better shot. And I think we see that the Tatum sometimes gets tunnel vision for heat checking in these big moments. And I think Jaylen Brown shows a little bit more patience within the system, honestly, probably because he doesn't have the ball in his hands. Usually JT has the ball in his hands. Usually JB is getting shots set up for him. So there's times where JB will get a quick trigger on a, you know, spot up three where he's contested, but at least he didn't have the ball in his hands. And like, it wasn't like as much of a choice to do that. Like he kind of had to do that in that moment a little bit more than JT does in those. And so I can see the perception that like people like Muhammad have of that JB is a better decision maker. But like also JB a lot of the time is kind of getting the decision fed to him. And it's really on JT or Smart to kind of read the whole floor and decide where they're going with it. And so that responsibility, I think, is another degree of difficulty. And if they had Jaylen make those reads, it's been more spotty in the past, Jaylen being able to really read the floor and make the, you know, the smart game management decision. I think Tatum throughout the year has been really good in that, even when he's gone cold. And so I think that home team fans tend to doubt their stars, I think, more than other fans, because they see their stars fail and they forget that other team stars fail all the time too. It's like Luka Doncic, he he messes up all the time. He turns it over all the time in these big situations. He's a lot more risky than Tatum, honestly. But he also hits some of the most insane shots we've seen in our lifetime. So, you know, if you compare him to like the other, you know, 25-year-old class of elite players that are kind of taking over the league, I think Tatum's probably on track with those guys. And I think he's fine. And I'm not really worried about building around him long term, especially when you just consider the context of like, there is absolutely no way that the Celtics will ever get a player better than Jason Tatum until they like draft somebody again in the top three, 10 years from now or something like that. There's nothing you can do about replacing Jason Tatum. And there's no way that you can get out of Jason Tatum and put yourself in a better position to succeed. So you gotta ride the Tatum wave all the way to the end of his career at this point.
Considering Tatum just turned 25, if the Celtics have a top three pick again sometime in the next decade, it sure as hell better be one that they acquired in a trade and not their own pick.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll stay with Tatum here. I will say that Brown's play recently has been unbelievable, and that's the reason why I have both of these guys. You don't trade either one of these guys. It's because sometimes one of them is not great, the other one is excellent, and that helps you win games. But I do want to stay on Tatum just because, you know, again, final 10 games of the season – you're weighing certain things, health, position, you know, how well the team's playing collectively all together. I know we've kind of danced around this, but I'm just going to ask Weiss point blank. Is the most important thing for the Celtics between here and the start of the playoffs getting Jason Tatum right? Because from where I'm sitting, like, you are not winning a title without him playing his best basketball. And if he's not going to be doing that, they have to find a way to make that happen. Am I wrong for that?
No, I mean, seeding is irrelevant to health. Right. It doesn't matter. The teams that win the championship are the teams that are the healthiest. It's pretty much always.
Except for the Philadelphia Eagles. They had all 22 starters healthy, lost the game.
Yeah, I mean, well, hey, it's not football. It's
a different sport, man.
I'm just pointing that out.
That's one game. That's anything can happen in one game. Look at what we've seen in March Madness lately. We're talking about a series, man, a best of seven.
Exactly, and that's why it's like your
health matters. Go tell Purdue. Everyone has to be healthy.
Yeah, you need to have your depth in place over the course of a series. You're going to win out in the end if you have all those guys healthy. Tatum stopped playing well after the second round last year because he was not really healthy anymore. His legs were shot. The wrist injury was an issue for him. It's like he was beat up, and there was more to it. Like, Golden State had an incredible defensive game plan. They were built to stop him really well. We still see it when he faces the Warriors. Draymond Green just has his number. Like, Draymond just knows how to pinch him with the help rotations in a way that just nobody else in the game does, which makes sense. Draymond's the best defender in the NBA. So, like, JT needs to be at his freshest, and that's why I would rather just kind of rest him more over these last few games, keep his minutes deflated for a little while to kind of just like help him ease up a little bit, keep him down to the 30 mark a little bit, or at least close to the 30 mark. You know, probably ramp him up a little bit more as you get through this last stretch here of 10 games. But like, this guy looks worn out. The guy's having terrible shooting nights. He's not getting up and getting good shots at the rack consistently the way he was before. It's like very apparent that he's just not the same. And it's on Mazzulla to like put his foot down and be like, you got to rest. And we know JT hates it. And JT says this stuff all the time of like, I hate resting. But it's like, I don't think it's a hard sell to be like, I know you hate resting, but you probably hate losing the title more. So we're going to rest you in these games that really aren't that important. And
well,
you
know, interestingly, too, it's a one game sample, but just, you know, recency bias, thinking about the Utah game, you watch through that game, and I'm sure a lot of people listening did. And the first quarter in particular, and into the second quarter, and he's catching fire, and he's, you know, having some of those heat check moments, but generally hitting his shots, not going over the top, taking a whole bunch of shots. I think he was like 4 out of 9 or whatever to start off, you know, which is not a big number. But you're looking at it, it's like, man, all right, like I think maybe he's turning the corner a little bit. And just in the scope of the same game, he didn't have a single point in the second half, did he? And you know, or if he did, he had like one. Some bad shots. It just not even pretty. Didn't even look good, to your point. Poor shot selection. It was just, it almost doesn't register with me what we're looking at sometimes with Jason Tatum. It almost goes, I guess regression, as you noted before, is maybe the best way to look at it. And sort of, you know, when I say regression, I mean back into some of the bad habits.
Yeah, and it's not just that. It's just, you know, poor shot selection. That translates into effort on the defensive end. You know, then he's, you know, hanging back because he's mad at not getting a foul call. Now the other team's 5-on-4. The other, like, it does trickle down a little bit. And that's the thing that I wish didn't happen as much, is that, like, sometimes his bad shot selection or his lack of something leads to easy points to the other team. And now, you know, now you got to really, you know, really focus in that team. And this team, frankly, and just Jared has said, has had a hard time focusing, especially the second half. And I don't know if it's just because you know, it's, they can't get up for these games. And I totally understand that, because it's like when you, the playoffs are a whole different animal. It's like a whole different season. But at the same time, you know, these are somewhat important to some people out there. And, it, you know, it, like, especially for me, like, watching Grant actually hit shots last night was a huge, like, okay, finally, like, this guy's starting to put it together. You know, we got, you know, for certain guys, like, the last 10 games are going to be really important to get them in rhythm, to get them ready for the playoffs, you know. And if the leader of the team isn't, you know, 100% in terms of certain avenues, it might, it does, to me, it looks like right now, have a trickle-down effect on the rest of the squad. It might be a little crazy, though.
As long as Grant isn't taking the last shot of the night. Guys, among the great many things that people were tweeting me about last night after that game, and really this has been fairly consistent in the last couple of months. I'm all too familiar, as you guys are, in your respective mentions from the first half of last year, when you just, I can't even count the number of hashtag fire Ime tweets that I got. Well, I mean, it's Joe Mazzulla's time to go, apparently, according to the vocal minority that is social media. So many tweets. I will just read one of them from Christine, which is, sadly, it's looking like Boston has the wrong coach. It's hard to deny that his rotations are beyond questionable. His adjustments are non-existent. I think he gets exposed in the playoffs. On top of that, he's so arrogant with the media, most especially people like Jared Weiss, like he is a proven coach. It's hard to like him. I added the Jared Weiss part. Okay. Oh, what are we thinking, Jared?
She's really been watching every presser.
This is impressive. What do you think? Like, you know, I don't need to tell you guys, and I don't need to tell the people listening, that there are people out there that are really skeptical of Joe Mazzulla based on a litany of factors over the course of this year. We have, I think, generally, Evan, over the course of this year and with our various guests, really pumped up Joe. We've been in favor of Joe, liked the hiring, liked him being, you know, getting the full head coach title and extension, not just the, you know, the interim tag and all that. Like, we are generally Joe Mazzulla supporters here on this program, but we acknowledge, you know, even Bill Belichick is not without his flaws. So what are we, what is your level of confidence in Joe Mazzulla as he ramps up for his first playoff run as a head coach?
I'd say moderately confident. I mean, these,
that's not inspiring.
No, well, right now you shouldn't be inspired. It's too early to have a referendum on Joe. We'll see how he does in the playoffs. I can just say, as far as the media thing, like, yeah, he can be a pain in the ass at the podium, and then you talk to him afterwards and he's great. And it's like, he's doing a shtick at the podium. I don't know why he does it, why he leans into it so strongly, but like, it's him doing an act clearly, or he's just pissed off after a game. But like, the talking to him, he's great to talk to when he's not in front of the mic. When he's in front of the mic, sometimes it's great and sometimes it's terrible. So, you know, but I definitely really like Joe a lot. So I've enjoyed working with him so far this year. And so, as far as his readiness, I think that most people don't know what adjustments actually are. So like most people will be like, there are no adjustments when they like change up their coverage, they change up their help. They change up their assignments. Like, they started running different actions. They switch from doing like spread pick and roll to horns actions, a setup, elbow touches, like stuff like that. Like, there's tons of stuff that changes that people don't notice change. They only notice who's playing what minutes. That's all that people really notice. And hey, maybe the person that tweeted is going to respond like, no, they actually ran snap out at the 4:37 mark. And that was the same thing they did in the first quarter. So yeah, maybe. But like, there's a lot more, like, actual adjustments are way smaller. Actual adjustments are like the guy doing the weak side help is going to lift from the block to the second hash mark. That you're going to do up to touch coverage on a pick instead of deep drop, where the big is still dropping below the screen, but instead of going down to the free throw line, he's going to be within an arm's reach of the screen. So like those are small adjustments that most people probably don't notice that do happen on a much more frequent basis. They're mostly going to notice like who started the second half, like when is Grant Williams checking in, that kind of thing. I think Joe is doing what most coaches do. And Joe, I think the things that I've frankly have asked Joe about a lot has been like, one, when he's calling plays in the second half on the fly, can they execute out of that? And that's been spotty. I don't know if that's on him. I mean, their plays aren't that complicated. There's not a ton of them. I guess it's a matter of chain of communication on the floor and do guys know where they're going. There's that. And then there's just like, I think the ability to recognize when your team is getting beat in a certain area, how does he respond to that? And I mean, in the Utah game, I think he did a nice job of, they were getting crushed on the glass. So he went triple big and he tried to match Utah's size and adjust to that. That was like a pretty big adjustment. He didn't play Derek White in the fourth quarter. And so people latched on to, you didn't play Derek White in the fourth quarter, but like he needed to go with the bigs. It was a gamble whether to go with, I guess, Muscala, since Grant Williams was so hot, you had to play him at the four, but like go with Muscala or go with Derek White. I understand, you know, the consternation over that because White's a much better player, but would you rather have Muscala's length? Like, does Derek White's ability to crash the glass really matter against a team that's playing that big? It probably makes more sense to have Muscala's length. So the Utah game is a good example of him adjusting, but did they lose too much offensive flow? You know, maybe. At the end of the day, it's like they topsided Grant Williams on the inbound. So they didn't put anybody on the inbounder. So it set Grant up to fail if he didn't commit to the play. And because JT took that crappy three and they only had 5 seconds, instead of like just, they had 5 seconds to run a play there at the very end. Grant Williams didn't really have the time to be patient to set up the DHO after Utah was topsiding him. So he made the read, didn't work out. He at least tried to draw a foul, didn't work out at all. And maybe, you know, I think most of the time Al Horford has the ball in that situation. Horford's bigger than he can finish. Grant was in a tough situation. They didn't have quite enough time for him to do what he, you know, probably wanted to do. But like that game would have felt, I think, a lot different if they were able to close that one out. So I think Joe is doing a decent job making adjustments. I think Joe is dealing with, frankly, a lot of guys that are just uninspired right now. And it's because last year they sucked for a long time. Then they got their shit together and they were cruising. But I don't think I remember them being super strong in like the very last weeks of the season. I think they could maybe like slowed it down a little bit there. But this is a team that dominated so early that they're not in the midst of their rise anymore. They got so high, the only place they had to go was down. And so they're really, right now, I think they're looking at the season as they're just tired of the regular season. They want to get to the playoffs. And
is this a group, though, that is seasoned enough? I know the run it went on and most of that group is still here, but is this a team that is seasoned enough, veteran enough, even in its experience, never mind age, that it can just flip that switch come the playoffs?
Yeah. I mean, this team isn't as young as people think anymore. You know, Jalen and Jason are in their mid-20s now. Al Horford is in his mid-50s now. Marcus Smart is deep into his prime at this point. Brogdon is deep into his prime. Derek White's in his prime. Like this is actually a team in its prime now. And Rob Williams is no longer a future piece. Rob Williams has not demonstrated enough health for you to bank on his prime being something the Celtics can expect to be a fringe all-star caliber player. That's out the window now. It's like it'd be great if it happened, but you just can't bet on it anymore. He hasn't been that great this year. He's been solid this year, but he hasn't been as good as he was last year, and he is not healthy again. So, you know, the Celtics are not a team on the rise. The Celtics are a team in their window. And they have the capability to open up another window down the road when Brown and Tatum are hitting like the 30s and they're going through their next contract. They definitely could do that. But like, this is their best chance. I mean, last year was their best. Whenever you make the finals, that's your best chance. There is no best chance after that. And right now, this is their best chance. And it was a hell of a bet by the organization to give Joe the extension instead of letting him try to win before, or letting him get the playoff test before he won. That was a big bet by them. But Missoula has the basketball acumen to do it. It's just that being a head coach, it's less about your X and O structure. It's more about your decision-making, your ability to establish power, and your game management. And we saw that was a huge strength for Udoka last year. And as much as Udoka, like, really, as much as Udoka changed up the system in ways that were really beneficial for the team, he was good because he was able to kind of have that epiphany moment for this team. And they really cruised off of that epiphany, but they're past the epiphany now. It's, you have a ton of energy and excitement when you first solve a problem. But then the hard part from there is like recognizing that once you no longer have that fresh excitement of living in a new world, can you actually live in it? And they're having trouble doing that.
Can we humor something that you just brought up, the big bet by the organization to, you know, give Joe obviously the deal and the title and everything before the end of the season? I think there were, and I'll speak for myself here as well, I think there were so many people just calling for it to happen, or in my case, viewed it as, regardless of when it happens, viewed it as an inevitability. Like, Joe is going to be the head coach of this team. He is going to be here for years to come. That I honestly, and maybe part of it was how well they were playing at the time too, but I just didn't really even consider the other side of that coin. Let's say they hadn't. Doesn't matter. They did. But let's say they hadn't given him the title, given him the extension. They go out. They flame out in the second round of the playoffs. Do you think this team would have a different coach next year?
Maybe. Huh. That's a great question. Consider it would have to be a pretty bad flame out. If they had a good season like they have, and then they made it and they lost to Milwaukee or Philly in a tough series, I think they would probably do a search and they would probably go with him. But like, if they completely fell on their face, like if they lost in the first round to like Miami or something like that, because Tyler Hero kept destroying their pick and roll coverage, you know, that I could see them looking elsewhere. But Joe, I mean, like, I think people are too freaked out by Joe, who's like a little bit unconventional and stuff, but like they've been too freaked out by some of the, you know, rough edges around Joe's tenure that they're kind of missing that, like, he's had a really good season. Like, they are very good. He did a phenomenal job weathering the storm early. Joe ceded so much power to the players early on. I thought he went overboard with it. And I think that has come back to bite him as time has gone on. You know, and I'm waiting to see him like really hold the Jays accountable, or like really hold people accountable. And he hasn't really done that yet. And Ime was great at that. Like, Ime would just be like, this guy sucks right now. You know, and it was incredibly entertaining. It was a lot of fun. And it worked. And he created the culture where people, or he came in at a time where people were willing to accept that. And I think everyone's ego got so inflated after that run last year, it's really hard to then come in again as the next substitute and be able to put your foot down, especially when you walk into it being like, I'm not going to do that. I trust these guys. This is their team. You know, it's really hard for Joe to then take the reins again after he kind of handed it to them. And so it does feel like Joe's been struggling through that a little bit. But also there just hasn't been much consistency for this team health-wise. And so we just don't get to see many stretches where he really has all of his pieces in a rhythm. And so if you get him to the playoffs and he's got most of his guys, I think things will look a lot better, frankly.
Yeah.
And I was like, you said, we just can't bank on the health.
Yeah, I was going through, because we mentioned this a while ago, how the Celtics finished the season. And, not totally sure if the Celtics finished the season really strong. They did. I'm going through, let's see here. One, two, three. This is awful podcasting, but I'm doing this kind of in real time.
Sorry, we're here for you. You need us to fill 15. Time?
Yeah, we'll wait.
It's 15. So they went 11-4 in the last 15 games. Including a huge win over Golden State at Golden State by almost 30. Beat the crap out of Sacramento, beat the crap out of Denver, beat the, 9-point win against Oklahoma City, destroyed Utah. I mean, they had a 42-point win over the poor Wizards towards the end of the year. They were playing much better, and you felt much better going into the postseason about this particular team. It was just more about the health of Rob and how he would bounce back. And here we are again. You know, where is Rob in terms of like, how does he look when he comes back? How do they manage his minutes? One of the big things, Jared, that, and I know what your answer is going to be to this, because I think I understand kind of, we've been talking for several years in this show. I think I have an understanding of where you're going to lie on this, but everybody's been trying to throw some cold water on the double big lineup. And then of course they go triple big last night. Do you think it's in Boston's best interest to always roll with Rob and Al, or is it more match dependent as we get more towards the playoffs?
I think starting games, they're probably going to do double big. Mm-hmm. Just because Al's been so good this year that you don't need, like, you're fine with him covering wings for the most part. And then I think just early in the games, being able to funnel everything into Rob, just it's good for the team because, one, it takes a little bit of pressure on their point of attack defense to be great out the gate, and it allows them to really practice some of their weak side recovery stuff. So it's actually pretty good for having guys communicate and move horizontally across the floor and kind of get into that flow of really working together. So I actually think it's better for them to do that. Because when they don't have Rob out there, it's like very switch heavy, and it's just like, it's like you're almost playing a zone. I think you can sometimes get kind of like, you know, slow down a little bit because you're not having to process as much when you're doing it that way. And then also with Rob out there, they are able to get out and run more because of all the plays he makes at the rim defensively. And so I think it's good for them to get out and run and have energy early on. So I would rather start with Rob and Al out there together. Al has been too good. You can't put him on the bench, so you can't start Derek because of that. So I would stick with that double big lineup when they're healthy, just because of that one trait that Rob gives them the potential to get off and running early on. Even though their best lineup this year has been Al the five with White in there. And so that's how they're going to close most games, I presume. I don't think Rob's going to close games.
I agree.
Probably certain scenarios, but I mean, that's how it was last year. It's kind of how it's always been for the most part. Sometimes he did, but like Al Horford is close to leading the NBA in shooting. He's been like one of the best shooters in the NBA.
Guy's unbelievable, man. Yeah. He's unbelievable.
He's still playing really good defense. He's still making good reads on offense. Like, he's still a really good player. And so he's, you know, he's one of your best players, and you're going to close with him. And Rob is just not that guy right now. Rob is just not a persistent looming threat on each end in the way that he was last year. He still operates pretty well within his sphere. But like last year, he was just a ball of energy, breaking up stuff all over the place. And right now he's more just kind of filling his role more defensively. I think he's actually pretty fine. He's not quite there yet, but he's pretty fine. But just offensively, you just don't really feel his presence through the actions as much anymore. Most of what comes to him is really just cleanup stuff from the dunker spot and the occasional lob, but they haven't really found his rhythm being a functional part of the offense in the same way that he was last year. And so I think that it's possible that, I mean, I don't really see them bringing in Rob off the bench to start the games. I just don't think their lineups work that way so much. But, and they've had a pretty good rotation of like taking out Rob at a certain point and putting him back in with a certain lineups, that kind of thing. So they kind of have their balance figured out there. I think they can kind of do a lot of the same stuff from last year with that. And also I like having Malcolm working with Rob in the second unit, just because like he's someone that can get downhill and he can get Rob a lot of lob actions. So that makes sense. So, yeah, I think start double big still for the most part, depending on your matchup. I'm trying to think off the top of my head who there could be. Horford still works against Miami. Horford still works against Brooklyn. So, yeah, whoever they're going to see in the first round probably
Atlanta
with Horford starting. Atlanta, yeah, Horford works against Collins. So, yeah, so they're going to start Robin and Al, I would assume.
Is that all what you expected, Evan, from Jared?
You know, it's funny. I kind of thought that he would lean more into the matchup dependent thing, but he kind of cross matched a little bit.
Well, I did. Those were the matchups, and matchups, it works for all those. Yeah.
Let's talk matchups, because you know you're sitting here, you're talking closing lineups, you're talking, you know, we were talking about Joe Mazzulla. Let's converge the group into the ball that is that loss against Utah and Derek White. People are just, you know, beside themselves, and I am one of them. Even when I try and explain it away to myself, about the fact that Derek White did not play, despite playing reasonably well during the night, and no Marcus Smart, obviously, did not play a single minute, not a moment, of that fourth quarter. And I realized that Malcolm was playing really well. I realize wanting to have the bigs out there because of the size of Utah's players, you know, and the what they were doing schematically speaking. But you just, like, Forsberg tweeted out, you know, a little earlier today, just the larger sample size. Celtics have played 162 crunch time minutes this season. Derek White has been on the floor for 55 and a half of those, so it's about 34%. Boston has played 60 overtime minutes this season. White has been on the floor for 16 of those, which is about 27%. It just feels like last night being one example, even to, I'm not saying it's why they lost. I'm not smart enough to know that, but I feel like there are many instances that a game will end. It will be a close loss, 1, 2, 3, 4 points. And I'm, you know, Derek White wasn't a part of it after having a pretty good night. And I'm sitting there going, all right, Joe, you know all this better than I do, no question. But where the hell was Derek tonight? Why aren't we seeing any Derek in the fourth quarter? Or why aren't we seeing Derek on the floor late as part of a close and late situation? What is the hang up there? If there is one that has sort of, I don't want to say Derek White's fallen out of favor, that's not the case, but he's just not getting these opportunities at these times that stupid fans like me sit and watch and say, where's Derek?
You're not stupid, because you're right. And, you know, I said before that Joe wanted to match up the bigs for Utah, but, like, it didn't work in the fourth quarter. And I think one of the complaints about Joe has been whether he responds to things not working in a timely manner. And if initially that was the timeouts, and I never had as big of a problem with the timeouts. At least early on, he was, like, very much like, I want them to work through these issues. At a certain point, you got to, like, start actually changing your process when it's not yielding results. But, you know, he probably could have gone with White at some point in crunch time and recognized, like, all right, this isn't really working for us. We need a better finisher. He also went with Sam Hauser instead of White at a certain point, where I don't know if that, because I think that was early in the quarter, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, so it's like maybe that was like, it's early in the quarter, White's probably going to close, and then he probably made a split decision potentially to go with, I guess, Muscala over White. And so, I mean, Cornette matches up with Walker Kessler, but Kessler beat him. You know, Muscala, I just didn't really think that he ended up making much of an impact at the rim for what they wanted him to do there. So it probably, it could have worked to just put White in there. And I would have rather had White in there for offensive reasons. Cause, like, if you're already not getting what you need defensively out of that lineup, then at that point, if it's not making a difference, you might as well just get in your better offensive decision makers. Also, White's shooting pretty well this year, so I'd rather have him out there just even as a shooter. Or if you're just looking for a shooter and you're choosing between Hauser, Muscala, and White, I'd definitely rather have White because he's close to being able to do a spot-up shot like those guys. Then there's just so much more for you. So, you know, he's really been playing Hauser a lot lately, and it's generally okay if it's like just like Hauser versus Grant Williams or Peyton Pritchard, although I think Grant is proving that he's better than Sam Hauser, as if we really need to know that. So I don't know why they didn't just give him the minutes that Hauser's getting. But, you know, like, Derek White shouldn't be missing fourth quarters. There should be room for him. You know, if White comes in at the 8-minute mark and then you only play him 3 minutes, you take him out at the 5-minute mark, then, like, so be it. I just don't know. At a certain point, he must have, like, I feel like there were points in that fourth quarter where they could have been like, all right, this triple big lineup isn't working for us. We need more offensive invigoration and running off of makes or misses or both to be able to, like, just, like, outscore them because we're not getting the stops. And I think that's putting a White should have been the move. I agree with that.
All right, we got to let you go in another couple minutes here. So last thing for me, and then if Evan has anything else for you as well. But like I said, 10 games left in this season. You got the one left on the road trip. I think we're all in agreement that health is the priority over seeding. I think that's, you know, when you have a good team, that's always the way. You're not as worried about matchups. Not that, you know, I'm eager to see Miami in round one, as you alluded to before. But hopefully that won't happen, obviously. But what short of getting Jason Tatum right and hoping that Rob can come back for a healthy postseason. What is the priority these last 10 games for anyone, be it a specific player, the team overall, for Joe to get himself in the right headspace? What are we focused in on here?
I think Joe needs to, the most important thing is that, like, Celtics are winning games and they're blowing them in the fourth quarter a lot of the time. So Joe needs to, and also I don't think it's the second units in the fourth quarter. It's really mostly these closing lineups. They come in either under duress because something was happening right before, or they just come in and they're kind of flat. And so Joe needs to, one, get the running mentality back. Like, this team needs to be a running team again. They've lost a lot of their pace. Take the ball out of the Jays' hands in crunch time and really lean into Brogdon, Smart as your playmakers. There's been a few games here where the Jays were just like not making good plays, and then Brogdon or Smart would get in there and they would start attacking and actually getting the dribble penetration. So I think he needs to really lean into those guys running offense in the fourth quarter and get some fourth quarter flow. That's number one. Finding a way to get the Williamses both back in there in the regular rotation. Like, I think we've seen now these last couple games, like, Grant got back in there for these last two games and it's been playing really well. And like, when Grant has confidence, he's hitting his shots, and his defense isn't quite as good this year as it was last year. Like, guys are getting around him a little bit more. You know, Nikhil Alexander Walker got around him in isolation for a big bucket. Or no, it was, I think it was Taylor Horton Tucker. Too many guys with three names. It was THT got by him for like a really nice bucket. Like, sure, it's going to happen, but like, that's a play in crunch time that I think Grant usually, after that second dribble, can stay just in front of him to wall him off, and Grant just couldn't do it. And so, like, I know Grant's been playing hurt. You know, he has some lower body stuff earlier in the year. I reported on his elbow thing. Like, Grant's been playing hurt for a lot of the season. And maybe that explains a little bit of his defensive drop off, at least guarding on the perimeter. But generally, he's still better guarding the perimeter than most of their other backup options. So I think this has been a reminder that Grant should be out there. And so they need to find a clear home for him in the rotation, because if they're facing Miami in the first round, it is go time for Grant. Like, Grant is a huge part of that matchup, and he needs to be 100% confident. And the team needs to know, like, we don't know what the rotation is, man. Like, we just haven't seen it consistently. They need to have a very clear rotation. They need to know, they don't want to be predictable to the point that the opponent knows where they are, but the team at least needs to have a feel for, like, where's my rhythm. And at least during the playoffs, it's like you're facing the same team for several weeks, so there's no more of the changes night to night like you have right now. So Joe's gonna pick something, he's gonna stick to it, presumably.
Have anything to add?
I'll throw a softball here for the last one for Jared. I don't know if people follow Jared on Instagram. I highly recommend doing so, because it's really fun to watch. Considering your travels, Jared, what's it like being the most interesting man on the Celtics beat?
I mean, I don't usually drink. I can't remember the name of the beer that has the Celtics.
There's
a beer that does a Celtics flavor. I can't remember it.
I know they had the Jack Abbey partnership.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking of.
Okay,
I usually drink Jack Abbey when I do. I don't usually drink beer when I do. It's Jack Abbey.
Jack's Abbey. Yeah.
I nailed that one. Perfect.
Yeah, we got there.
Cut, I'm about to hit the Southie Parade, so I guess I'll find some Jack Abbey there.
There you go.
My first time, too. I've never gone. It's too ratchet for me, but I figure, what the hell, might as well.
Why not? What else are you doing on Sunday? Man.
Yeah.
No, I got to finish writing my story, and then I'll go check it out.
Yeah, it's not like you're getting ready to hop a flight to Sacramento or anything like that. So,
thankfully not. Although, actually, I'm sad I'm missing Sacramento. Jay King's on that trip. I'm kind of jealous of it. He's the biggest Kings fan in the world, so I'm very happy for him.
Light the beam, baby.
I want to see them light that MF beam. I want to see the Celtics lose. I can see that goddamn
beam. I think the Kings are the most fun storyline of 2023, and it's not even close. It's been awesome. No, I love it.
Close to that. Yeah. Shout out Mike Brown, easy coach of the year candidate.
Not even close.
De'Aaron Fox is going to win clutch play of the year, too, most likely. Yeah. Unless Jason Tatum figures the shit out, which I don't think is going to happen.
I'll go full circle too. A buddy of ours, Seth, who comes on this show from time to time and is part of our, you know, Celtics in-game text chain, he wrote recently. He's like, you know, because he watches League Pass, everything, everywhere, all the time. He's like, I got to tell you, Kyle Draper might be one of my favorite broadcasters in the league in terms of play-by-play. I was like, man,
Mark Jones also great.
It's a very limited sample size, obviously, when he would fill in for Gorman back when he was here. So, he's apparently crushing the opportunity out there.
Yeah, well, Kings fans are blessed. They've got a great team. They got a great commentary. I mean, the fact that they have Mark Jones and Kyle
Mark Draper, Jones.
Like, the fact that they have Mark Jones doing their games is, like, kind of nuts. Like, he's awesome. He's my favorite guy nationally. And Drapes is really good too. So yeah, they got a stacked lineup there, and they have a like a genuinely entertaining team. I don't know if they've ever played defense before, but
it's okay.
Vivek doesn't believe in defense, right? He's running 100 possessions. Yeah.
Keep it up. Keep it up. Entertaining lineup here too when it's healthy. It's just we don't see that too often. But we're good. We're here. Valenti, Kaufman, and Weiss. So thanks for being with us. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff here with Celtics Beat. Thank you to all of our sponsors for this program. Obviously, without you, we would be here, but it wouldn't be nearly the same. So we hope you guys all stick around with us. And without the listeners, we literally would just be talking to ourselves. So we'll see you later. Hopefully the Celtics finish strong here, but we'll check in again after the next few games. Bye.